welcome to another fabulous episode of Retrovaniacs. As always, I'm Jeremy Parmentier, here with Jeremy Gregory.
Hola, amigos.
And Billy Holiday.
Whoa, I'm completely thrown off. I do not have another foreign language. Hello.
You got a few weeks to work on it for next time, but I think that's okay. This week we are going to talk about Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap for the Sega Master System, and the recent remake of that game. But before we get to it, Jeremy, what have you been playing since last time?
Well, I've kind of played a few things, I think, since the last time we actually got together. What did I play? What Remains of Edith Finch? If you enjoy your walking simulators, I know we've kind of talked about those games on here before. Mm-hmm. Kind of a love-hate relationship for a lot of people with those kinds of games. But if you enjoy those types of games like Firewatch or Gone Home, it's a really great game to sit down with for, I think it's like 3 hours long. I mean, it's worth it. Just one of the best ones I've played. It's probably not as good as Firewatch in my book, but if you like yourself a good depressing game that's all about death, and you're just not feeling great about your life or anything like that, then you just want to sit down and be like, oh God, everything's shit. Play that game. That is a great game to just kind of sit down and think about things. Really, it's not overbearing or anything like that. It's very it does a very good job in how it presents the tone of the game. It's not overly depressing or anything like that, but really just a great walking simulator and a great story overall. But I think the main thing I've been playing lately is the Prey game, the new Prey game. And about the best thing I can say about that is if you really liked BioShock and System Shock 2, then you have found your new favorite game, because this is essentially more of an homage to System Shock 2 than anything. This is a very modern take on that game. If you ever played System Shock 2, it's very sci-fi, very inventory driven. You're walking around a space station, everything's kind of off and weird. And that is Prey to a T. It is incredibly fun. Just every area you can just sit and explore. You know, I can sit and explore every area for like an hour or more and find neat little things here and there. It's a very well done game. My worst complaint about it is maybe the combat isn't so great, but everything else about that game, I would recommend to anyone that maybe the rest of the BioShock series after BioShock 2 wasn't exactly what they wanted. Maybe they wanted more, or if you wanted a System Shock 2 sequel and you never got that, well, Prey is essentially that.
I heard a lot of good things about it, but it, you know, it's another one of those things where I was like, yeah, I'll get to that eventually, because I found myself falling back into the trap where I've bought way too many games that I don't have the time to finish, which is mainly because I buy games that are going to take too long. I got Uncharted 4 with the PlayStation. That's probably the shortest game that I've bought other than like, you know, a $10 indie game. So I've been doing is playing Persona 5. That's it. Nothing but Persona 5 on my actual PS4. I bought the remake of Wonder Boy, The Dragon's Trap, so we could talk about it today. But other than that, the only other thing I've been playing is I found a new podcast called Eaten by a Gru, and it's about the old Infocom games. So then I downloaded the Lost Treasures of Infocom for my phone, and I've been playing a whole lot of Infocom text games, which are games sure would drive everybody else on the planet insane, and I can't finish any of them. I mean, I don't feel so bad. Because the podcast is basically them saying, no, we had to look this up all up. I don't know how we would have figured this out before, but they give it a good try before they get to that point. And so I'll play along and try to figure out, I'm going to figure this game out. And I'm literally, you know, they tell you after you die, like how far you are in a game or whatever. And I can't get past like 10% on any of those games. I like to feel real dumb once in a while. So these are helping me out with that. those are impossible even now.
I just can't imagine playing. I've seen them. You know, those were kind of... I didn't play computer games back when I was a kid. You know, I think the earliest console I played was the Atari 2600. But as far as PC games, I never got into those. And the text-based adventure games, those seem just like you were just slamming your head against a wall nonstop. And I don't think I could do those, which is maybe a teaser for the game that's coming up on the next podcast. But at least that has some visuals going along with it. These text-based ones, I just can't imagine what you had to do to get past those.
Well, even now I can't. I mean, as a kid, I had a handful of them. I know I had the Hitchhiker's Guide, and I had Leather Goddesses of Phobos, and then I had a bunch of off-brand ones that weren't Infocom. But I had played Zork because it was on one of the computers at school, and never got far in that. I mean, all those games are they expect you to have drawn out maps and have tried a million things. I mean, you know, once you know how to finish those games, you can plow through them in 15, 20 minutes. But it's learning what to do. Each step, trying to figure out what to do for the next step on my own, feels like it takes me hours to figure out what one command that would be get me to the next step would be. In a way, I really like it. It's kind of refreshing to play those sort of games again. But again, buying it for a collection where the entire collection is $10 as opposed to paying, what, $30, $40 a game is also a nice call. So I don't mind that at all. But it's definitely keeping me busy. But Billy, what have you been playing?
I've still been on that Switch. I'm working that Switch pretty hard. Mario Kart, I've been online a lot with it lately and enjoying that. Runs pretty smooth. Zelda, I abandoned the Divine Beast I was trying to beat before and found another one that matches up with my IQ level a little better, I think. So I'm enjoying that game again after a brief frustration. But I got on a very strange kick for a while there and downloaded several games. I picked up Mortal Kombat 10. Because for some reason, one night, I wanted to play a Mortal Kombat game. And I mean, I got it for pretty cheap, too. So I played through it, and that was a good hour or two.
Yeah.
Very enjoyable. But I picked up that Rayman Legends, and I've been playing through that and forgot how much I enjoyed that franchise. Rayman just completely exited my mind for many years there. Until I just saw this one while I was browsing through the store. And I've been playing that the majority of the last few days.
Yeah, that game's excellent. I bought that when it was new and loved it. I loved it a lot. That's one that when it came out, it came out a little early with like a demo, and the demo gave you almost like a free level that changed every day to see how you could do against the rest of the world. I thought that mm-hmm. was pretty fun too. I don't know if that's on the current version now, but that was like the kind of thing I was like, do I even need to buy the full game? Cause I'm having fun with this every day without it. But the full game, well worth it. An excellent game.
Which Divine Beast got the best of you? Was it that camel one?
It was the camel one. I had to go to the fly. I went to the flying one and you know, that was 20 minutes and he was down. That camel one though, I'm going to have to, I'll come back to that. Last, I believe.
Yeah, that's what I had to do. I managed to do that one last, and I didn't. I did that second to last, and I did the lizard one last, the one that's in the volcano. And I, as soon as I did the lizard one, I was like, man, I should have did that camel one last because that the lizard one was way easy compared to the that camel. That camel is just a bitch. But
I don't remember what made the camel so difficult. I mean, I know it was hard. I mean, it's definitely the hardest of the four, but now I can't remember exactly which thing I got stuck in there.
It's got like three or four independently spinning midsections.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Now I remember. Well, I kind of feel like I cheesed that one a little bit.
I did too. I had the bird power where you can jump really high, and I totally cheesed a few of those. And if I didn't have that, I don't know. I would have totally skipped it too.
Yeah, I must have done the same thing because I was like, I know I kind of like, I was like, yeah, that got to me to the end, but there's no way that was the intended way to beat this. But oh well, move on.
It lets you do it.
Well,
you
know, and that was one of the things I really liked about that.
If you want to do it that way, it's totally fine with letting you do it.
Yeah, that's the best. In my opinion, that's the best thing about that game. I liked it start to finish. It was fun, but I liked that it was kind of like, well, if we let you do it, then go for it. If you can find a way to break this, go to town. And I mm-hmm. enjoyed that. Well, this week's game didn't really give you too many ways to break the system, but still a classic in many ways. Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap for the Sega Master System.
I knew nothing about this game going in. I had a Sega Master System, and I had just a scant number of games for it. Alex Kidd, Rocky, Rambo, some reason some heavy Sylvester Stallone games. I had no idea about this one, and so I was excited to play it. And it is a Jeremy P. childhood game, so that that comes with a word of warning. as I say every time we review one of them, I say another piece of the puzzle has fallen. But I will have to see if I was pleasantly surprised with this one or not.
I was the same way. I didn't own a Sega Master System myself as a kid. You know, I would always look on at it at Toys R Us and be like, that's weird. You know, that's got some neat looking games. You know, you were talking about Sylvester Stallone, the best Rambo game by far.
Oh, it's excellent.
Probably the best Akari Warriors home console game that's ever been made into a Rambo game. But I never actually owned a Master System, and I only knew about Wonder Boy just in passing. And I think the only time I ever kind of played it was in that Sonic's collection for the 360. I think you've got to play it for a second to get an achievement or a trophy. And I was trying to get all of them, and I played it maybe for a couple of minutes to get that. I don't even think it was Wonder Boy 3. I think it was just another one that was on the collection. But I had never actually heard of it. And Jeremy mentioned it, and I noticed that it actually had a remaster that had come out. So I was like, yeah, well, let's try this. You know, we can see, you know, how it is. You know, if it's good enough to have a remaster, I'm genuinely down with it for trying it at least, because it's got to have something to it that's awesome, that's carried over for like 30 years to warrant that kind of effort put into it.
Yeah, the remaster is excellent. I mean, as far as the quality of a remaster, whether or not you like the game will depend. You know, the game has not changed, but the graphics are definitely upgraded. The sound is upgraded, but the actual game itself literally is the same game with this layer built on top of it that looks and sounds a lot nicer. There are a few minor changes. We're generally going to talk about the game as if we were all playing it on the Master System, even though I know we're all playing it on this this remaster. So there are some minor differences. I'll point them out if we need to talk about them. But generally, the remaster is a very, very accurate version of the original game, including letting you go back to the original graphics and original sound, which is how I played this the whole way through, because I love the graphics and sound of this original game. I think the remaster has some wonderful graphics, and the sound is fine, but the original as it is built is what I remember. I had played this both the original game is on the Sega Master System, and I had a friend with the Sega Master System, and this was one of the games that we never really bothered playing with too often because he didn't like it. And there was one sleepover where, like, you know, he was doing his own thing or he fell asleep or whatever, and I started playing this, and I was like, this game's amazing, why have I never played this? And he's like, I don't know, I didn't really like it, I don't care for it. And I hadn't gotten very far. I maybe got to the one of the first transformations. And a couple years later, after I got my TurboGrafx, we picked up a game called Dragon's Curse. And it's the exact same game. It's not a case where they ripped it off. I mean, it's a game they had the license to run again, but they couldn't put Wonder Boy on it because it wasn't a Sega system. So they just called it Dragon's Curse and re-released it. It's the exact same game with some better graphics. And the sound is slightly different because it's a different system that it's on. But it's still the same tunes, same songs, just kind of through a different chip. But it's the same game, one-to-one. So at that point, I was like, oh, my God. So I've played this game through on, you know, I have played it through on the Master System. I have played it through on the TurboGrafx many times. And then again on this remaster. Knowing that and not spoiling anything, since I even said, I think, last episode, this is one of my favorite 8-bit games of all time. It's definitely my favorite Sega Master System game. But it's one of the top 10. Like, if I had to throw all my other games away and only keep 10 games, this game would definitely be on that list. And I felt, I'm glad they put out a remaster so there was more people playing this, because I think a lot of people skipped over it because it was never on a Nintendo property. And the Wonder Boy series itself is kind of a weird series. I think before we actually talk about this game, I just want to do a brief look at the whole series of Wonder Boy games, just because it kind of branches off and has some weird paths. And this isn't even going to be correct. It's going to be correct, but there's a lot I'm leaving out. So the original Wonder Boy is an arcade game that was also ported to the Master System, and that was the first Wonder Boy game I played. If you've never played the original Wonder Boy, it was ported to the Nintendo and changed, because again, they can't use the name Wonder Boy, it's not a Sega system, as Hudson's Adventure Island. So if you've played Hudson's Adventure Island, the very first Wonder Boy game is that, with different, like, a different main character.
That's really weird. I mean, was Wonder Boy supposed to be Sega's original mascot? Was he the Sonic before Sonic?
Alex Kidd was their mascot
before
Sonic. Alex
Kidd, that's what I was thinking of. Okay.
But Wonder Boy was still, I mean, it's one of those things where it's kind of like, yeah, I wouldn't say it's on the same scale of Zelda or Metroid, but it was definitely one of the characters that was part of the Sega library and their roster of characters. So the Wonder Boy's fine, but it plays exactly like Adventure Island here. If you'd never played those, it's almost like an auto side scroller from right to left. You have a built-in time limit to the game because your life slowly goes down as you play the game unless you pick up fruit items to keep it going. You go through four levels. There's a boss. All the bosses are almost exactly the same like JJ and Jeff was. And then, you know, you finish your 32 levels of the game and it ends. I mean, it's fine. It's fun. Again, for compared to going from an Atari and television, ColecoVision, this was a pretty impressive game. It's an early Sega Master System game. But it's not one you'll want to run out today and pick up if you don't remember it. So they put out a sequel to that was in the arcade as well, and also the Master System called Wonder Boy and Monster Land. It's very similar to what this game does, but it's not as refined. So I don't want to get into that game too much, except that this game starts exactly where Wonder Boy and Monster Land ends. I mean, literally the last boss of Wonder Boy and Monster Land is the first boss you fight in the intro to this game. And it goes from there. So that's a direct sequel to Wonder Boy Monster Land. There's actually two Wonder Boy 3s. There's Wonder Boy 3 Monster Lair that came out in the arcades in 1988, and that was never ported to the Sega Master System. It was put out, though, on the Sega Mega Drive and also on the TurboGrafx-16. It came out as a game which is called Monster Lair. It's much, much more like the original Wonder Boy, except that at the end of each level, you like jump on a monster and fly around. It becomes a shooter. But it's still totally different from this. It's like the Wonder Boy Monster Land kind of took the idea of making this character kind of a Metroidvania style thing, and then Wonder Boy 3 went back to no, let's make this much more of an arcade linear style game. So then for the Master System exclusively, they released Wonder Boy 3 The Dragon's Trap. At the same time, same development people too, so it's not even like it was a deal where they licensed this property out to two different Wonder Boy 3s. They just made a 3 for the arcade and a 3 for homes, and the home system game is the one we're going to talk about today. Which is Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap. It starts out almost like any adventure game, sort of. You know, you're going into the last castle. You're fully powered up. You're going to fight this boss you've been trying to take down, you know, quote, since the start of time or whatever. And that's the Mecha Dragon, which was you have enough life to make it so it's almost impossible to die. But mechanically, he's probably the hardest boss in the game to try not to get hit and fight.
Yeah, he kind of is.
I mean, he can hit you a million times, but he barely does any damage. And eventually, you'll whittle him down, take him out. And after you take out this dragon, instead of being happy because you've defeated the Mecha Dragon forever, this cursed flame comes out of him, flies around the room, and eventually hits you, turning you into a lizard man. It takes away all your great items, leaving you with some weak swords, shields, and armor. It takes all your health down, except from 8 or 9 health bars down to 1. And you have to then escape from this castle that's falling apart and escape these monsters in an incredibly weakened state as a lizard man to figure out what to do next. And that's about as far as I had gotten when I first played this at my friend's house. I got through this part, and I turned into lizard man, and I wandered around the town, and I kind of like realized what kind of game it was. And then that's all I got to do that night. That was it. And I was hooked from then on. I mean, it was this... At this point, did you guys decide this is interesting, or did you say, Jeremy, you've got some terrible taste in games, and we're tired of dealing with you?
I thought this was an extremely interesting way to start a game. You don't really see, so I mean, there's the usual: you start off with nothing, you progress up, and then you're super powered by the end of it. But it was a very fresh take to see it, kind of in the reverse. I guess it leaves you hopeful for what you may be. How you may be powered up towards the end. But yeah, this beginning here, really, it really did pull me in. And I have to say, my biggest difficulty with this game, I tried my best to play it with the original graphics, but this is just a beautiful game, the remake of it, the art style of it. And it was hard to keep it on that original, but I did the best I could. I've rolled maybe 50% of the game.
I mean, I was kind of the same way. I'm sure we'll get to talking about the, you know, the remaster and how it's a little bit different here in a bit. But as far as like, just how it starts, you know, I can kind of see why your friend wasn't really into it, because if you were just expecting a straight up platformer, you kind of get it when it very first starts. You know, you're going through the castle, you're fighting the Mecha Dragon, But after that, you know, it kind of starts you in this little village. It's not telling you where you need to go. It's very open ended at that point. And if you're not expecting that, then it can be, it's kind of weird, you know, and it kind of put me off to it at the very first, because I didn't know what kind of game this was. I was just going off of the pictures of the remaster, because I was like, man, this looks really beautiful. And it is, but it doesn't really explain what kind of game this is. And I wasn't expecting the kind of Metroidvania, the very basic Metroidvania that it is. So when it dropped me in that very first village, I was just like, what am I supposed to do? Where do I go? You know, there's so many different places that you can start off to try to explore. And I just didn't know where to go. And that would be something that kind of bothered me for the rest of the game. But, you know, I'm just going to say right now that I love this game. I'm not going to shit on this game too much at all, besides some of the stuff that's just, you know, it's an old game. And that's kind of what the remaster is. But yeah, I mean, from the beginning, I wasn't quite sure what I was supposed to do. So I can totally see why people may kind of be put off to it.
Well, yeah, it definitely has that same early Metroidvania not telling you anything. It's trial and error. I mean, even the original Metroid, you can kind of go many different directions, but as soon as you're in the wrong place, either there's a jump you can't make, or things kill you instantly, like just the background does damage to you, or there's you know, swimming or something you can't do. This does the very same thing, where it's like you do start in that little village after the intro piece is over, and you can go really only to three different places that matter. There's a lot of little hidden places you can wander through and find some, you know, you can find the store, you can find the nurse who will heal you for money. You will find like a little place that just takes you to a chest that gives you another health point almost immediately, which is nice. But after that, there's really three places that you can go to. One is an underwater section that leads to a beach that has almost like two tiers. There's the above water section and the below water section. And then there's also, if you go up the tower in town, it takes you to a desert area that you can go left or you can go right. And if you go right, you go towards a volcano. If you go left, you can go towards what eventually takes you to some pyramids. But you would have to just explore and figure out where to go. And at least of those three areas, the beach itself and the desert are very, very doable. You're not overpowered there, or you're not being overpowered there. You're not having to hit things 25 times to get through them. You could go either direction and kind of think you're going the right way. The volcano section, again, up the tower and to the right, is much, much harder. Things are taking three or four hits to kill at the beginning. Some later things in the level, if you get there that early, if you can manage to survive that far, will take 10 or 11 hits to kill, and that's going to kill you most of the time before you have a chance. It definitely lets you go and try to get through certain spots more than most other Metroidvania-style games do before it really just says, okay, you can't go this way. There's definitely some things you can't get to yet, but there are enough paths that it doesn't totally streamline where you have to go.
Yeah, and there's an illusion of choice in this game. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe if you're a greater skill level than me, you can go to some of those other spots. But yeah, I found out pretty it corralled me where I needed to go pretty quickly, which I appreciated, because like Jeremy said at the beginning, I was pretty lost. I mean, I stuck around with this one because you know Jeremy P had a lot of good to say about it, and that still means something to me. I'll add Jeremy P's opinion is still of some value. So yeah, I stuck to it, but yeah, it was without being linear, I think it was just the right touch of, I felt like I had choices, but I was kind of being pushed in a certain direction, which I actually appreciated.
Yeah, that was, I think I just kind of lucked into the beach, the first thing myself. There's really no end game to the beach besides getting to a store at the very end of it. But, the very first thing I noticed when going to the beach was I fell into the water, and I instantly thought that, well, I'm dead. But what this game would have probably blown my mind as a kid is like when you fall into that pit or when you fall into the water, you go a screen below and you're now in the water. And, you know, you don't die from it. You're just in a whole new section. Mm-hmm. Which would eventually, towards the end of the game, turn into where you have to go into the ghost ship. I mean, this game it really did some amazing stuff for back in the day, really ahead of its time, that would have probably just blown my mind as a kid. I like I said, when I fell, even today, when I fell into that water, I was like, holy shit, there's something underneath here that I can go to.
Yeah, there's a lot of parts, a lot of hidden parts of this game, or parts that you'll return. You do a lot of backtracking, which a lot of people don't care for backtracking, but the overall map for this game is not that big. It seems big at the time because you're going through all these new areas and it seems overwhelming at first. You really kind of put it together, but the map is not that big. So to have to do a little bit of backtracking, and you only have to do backtracking, I'd say the game is basically one big map within some, you know, the smaller dungeon maps kind of branch off of it. You don't have to go back into the old dungeons generally. But the world map as a whole, you will do some back and forth until you end up at the, you know, the branch of that map that will lead you to the eventual temple. Oh, actually, there was a point to go through the beach. That's to get a key. Along with, you know, you'll find some shops and some other ways you can earn to upgrade your character, along with getting more health, which is a universal upgrade that's always helpful. You can find other swords, shields, armors, and some special items that will help you in your quest to take out these dragons. The whole point of the game is to go and find other dragons that you'll then take out, who eventually give you the, I think it's called like the Salamander Cross, which will let you turn back into a human. The whole point of the game is to become human again. Now that you've taken out the Mecha Dragon, now you can kill these other dragons, turn back into a human, and hooray, everyone's, you know, happy again in Monster World. Start the game after the intro piece with the weakest sword, shield, and armor. And there are shops hidden around the world that you can find that will give you betters for all those things. What the game doesn't tell you is, what you'll find out after the first boss you come to, you earn other forms in this game as well. So you're not just a dragon the whole time. You turn into a mouse man and a fish man, all these other things that happen. But the weapons and the swords and shields, sword, shields, and armor all have different stats depending on what form you're in at the time. So you may have a great sword for when you're, you know, let's say Mouse Man, and then when you have to switch up to what they call Piranha Man later on in the game, that sword may no longer be any good. The shield may not, it may only give you like 10 points of defense, where there are special shields for being underwater that give you 100 points of defense. You have to pay attention to that to really maximize the benefit, but it's also why my best rule is, if there is a new sword and shield, even if it's weaker than what you have right now, just buy it, because there's a good chance you're going to have another form later that it's going to be better than the things you're wearing now, or a very specific reason to have them that you don't have it yet. And there's not that many. You can see on your inventory screen there's 10 of each. You're not going to need to go out and find 200 swords, and it's, you don't have to optimize them. It's, you know, you get a sword, you keep it, you switch to it at will. There's no big deal. But that's the main things you'll do to upgrade your character. The other things that you'll find as you kill characters is special one-use items, fireballs, tornadoes, lightning, boomerangs, and I think that's it. Oh, an arrow that shoots straight up. So you can find a lot of these items as you kill monsters. And for a while, I stockpiled them. I was afraid to use them. Mm-hmm. But when you die in this game, you'll keep all the money you've earned. You keep any items you've bought. But any of the items you find that are the fireballs, whatever, you lose all those things, and you end up back at the town. So it's one of those deals where it's like, if you're already losing, just use those items. Use whatever you can to keep going, because if you die, you're going to lose all of them anyway. And I don't know, even though I knew that, I still was like, oh, I want to save up these fireballs. What if I need them later? And I'd never end up using them. By the time I was really in desperate need of those items, I was well too far along to have them any left, because I'd already died several times.
I instinctively hoard things. Yeah, I did the exact same thing, and I after I learned that, yeah, you're not holding on to these things, I tried to use them a little bit more, but I don't know what it is. I've been conditioned by these games to just hold on to these, because, you know, at towards the end you're going to need it. I tried to get myself out of that, but I can't do it.
When did this game actually come out? What year was it?
1989.
Okay. For Sega Master System? I guess so. It kind of blew me away that, you know, that it had all this stuff for being a Sega Master System game. You not only do you have the kind of Metroidvania light game and inventory system and shops and all this stuff, but, you know, all of that, and also how every fucking sword and shield and armor you buy has a different effect depending on what creature you're transformed in at the time is kind of crazy. And then at the beginning, I didn't understand that. You know, you were talking about how all those has different stats depending. It actually kind of tells you, but I wasn't paying attention. But, you know, the swords and all that stuff, they do have different stats depending on what you pick. And I finally figured that one out. But I did totally do what Billy did with the items as far as like hoarding them. And, you know, as far as kind of being ahead of its time, it's also kind of doing a roguelike thing with letting you keep your money and stuff like that that you find when you die. But you do lose all of those items. And there are a few of those items that I would kind of consider garbage, but then there's like one or two that I would say are just like almost required to make it through that game. And those are the ones that are the hardest to find in the whole game. So once I figured out what those were, I kind of started to realize, you know, these are the ones I need to save. And the other ones I can just kind of use whenever. That was generally what I did with the items. Once I figured out which ones were kind of disposable, which ones kind of dropped the most, I would use those when I needed to. But the ones that were kind of hard to find and more rare, I would save those when I really needed them.
Yeah, of the five items, I mean, the one that the lightning bolts hit everything on the screen, those are always good. Those are always nice to have. They don't do a whole lot of damage, but especially in some of the areas where you've got to make some questionable jumps around items, around enemies, it's well worth having those. The boomerangs are gold. I didn't realize how great those were. I mean, up until this playthrough for this podcast, I didn't realize how amazing the boomerangs were, because they're boomerangs. So if you throw them in front of you and you actually get them to come back and catch them, they don't go away from your inventory. You can, if you have two of them, you can shoot two of them at a time, and you essentially can just slowly trudge your way through a hallway full of bad guys and hit them over and over again with these boomerangs. And unlike a lot of the other attacks, there's a lot of enemies when you go to hit them, they'll either jump away or they'll throw rocks or whatever when you hit them the first time. The boomerangs hit them fast enough and often enough that never comes up. And you can just literally becomes almost a shooter at that point, as long as you can catch those boomerangs again at the other end. But they are fairly rare, and it's always the worst when you think you've hit one, and then you jump to like get over an enemy throwing something at you, and you realize you just lost your boomerang. The saddest day, especially towards the end of the game. There's definitely a few hallways where without boomerangs, you're just like, oh my god, this is painful, and I'm gonna just tank it. I'm just gonna run as fast as I can, and just see if I can get all these guys behind me before I get to the end of the room.
Yeah, I'd say like the boomerangs are, for me anyway, my playthrough, I absolutely had to have the boomerangs to beat the game. Like those seem almost required to me. The lightning was second best. You know, it was nice to kind of throw out there and hit everything on the screen at once. But, you know, you've also got the, I think it's like the tornado. You get that one, it seems like the most. When you kill an enemy, they will either drop money or an item or something like that. And it seemed like the two most common that you get is the it's like a fireball that you can shoot out in front of you, or the tornado, which you also shoot out in front of you and just kind of glides across the floor. I didn't, you know, the tornado is nice to have, but I didn't really find too many uses where I was like, oh man, you know, that was totally useful, because for the most part, the weapon I had would generally kill everything in like a hit or two. Like I was never just like, oh man, I really need something that can take this thing out way quicker than what I can take it out with a regular weapon. So like the tornado and the fireball, it was nice to have, but that boomerang, that is like, that's the thing to have in this game. And if you don't have it towards the end of the game, it can be really rough.
Well, it's the only ranged attack you have is those items. I mean, if you're the lizard man, your sword becomes just spitting fire. And that's great and all. But otherwise, the lizard man is useless and he can't do anything the other forms can do that you need them to do to get to the rest of the game. So after you get past lizard man, everything is just sword and shield. And so having the ability to have some projectiles, especially ones you can use over and over again, is wonderful. And it was something, I don't know why it never clicked with me before, but I did it this time, and it's the only way I was able to beat the hard playthrough on this was because I had boomerangs. Otherwise, and I'll get into that, but it's definitely hard. I'll give it that. So aside from all the things you can find and pick up, the actual game itself, the reason that this game to me is so memorable is that you do have these other forms. So as we said before, you can go several different directions, but the way you're supposed to go, you go to the beach to get the key, then you go back to the tower to unlock the tower, and go left at the top of the tower in that sand in the desert area, and that will take you eventually to some pyramids. The pyramids themselves, I mean, that was not a hard area, I want to say, by any means, to get to the pyramid. And that boss is the first time you run into the first boss, which is the mummy dragon. And it's that point where you kind of realize the bosses in this game probably aren't going to be that difficult.
No.
They have some extremely simple patterns.
Yeah,
and it seemed like the strategy for just about every boss was just jumping and hitting them in the head. I'm pretty sure that was literally it for every single boss. I was kind of waiting for for all these bosses. I was like, oh man, this is going to be the one that gets crazy, and it never happened all the way up to the end. I think the bosses are by far the weakest point of this entire game. Every single one of them can be beaten the same way. They all, you know, they've all kind of got their things that they can do. They're not just JJ and Jeffnet. I just create a new term, JJ and Jeffnet. you know, it's not just Macho Man in a different outfit every single boss. They are literally, they do their own thing, but you beat them all in the same way. And they're all very, very easy to beat. It's just a matter of figuring out their patterns, and if you've got the health and the, you know, the abilities at all, you can take them down super easy.
Yeah, and that's going to be probably, I don't have a lot of complaints about this game. This is the biggest one. Yeah, the bosses are a big letdown. Once again, graphically impressive, whether you're playing with the new graphics or the old. But yeah, it's just a matter of you notice the pattern with the health and a little bit of patience, you'll get through them. There's no denying that. There's no trouble to be had with these bosses, which is a little bit of a letdown.
In a way, I didn't mind it because to get to some of the bosses is kind of difficult. So I think getting, especially some of the later bosses, the trip there is so long that you're like, if I die to this boss, I may never beat this game. I may just come back another year and try again. But it's nice that most of the bosses, once you get to them, unless you get to them with one heart and no idea what to do, you should probably be able to blow that boss away until the very end. I think the last boss has a few more moves that he makes, a little more difficult randomness to him, but it's still the same idea. You jump up, you hit him in the head for every single boss. So after you beat the mummy boss, again, another curse flame shoots around the room, and eventually it hits you as Lizard Man, and it turns you from Lizard Man into Mouse Man. Mouse Man is half the height of Lizard Man. He has a sword and shield, but Mouse Man's special ability is that he can climb on certain walls. There's a lot of walls that look like checkerboards almost that are all around the level. You see them all over the pyramid, and if you walk against that wall or jump on the wall and push towards it, he'll cling to it and walk on it as if it was the regular ground. And there's a lot more areas that open up from the main city that you couldn't get to before because there was a wall you couldn't get over. But you notice now, wait a minute, that wall is checkerboards. Now I can climb over it and get to this whole other area. That's the kind of... I love Metroidvanias. It's hands down my favorite style of game. And so to have one where the reason I can go to different areas is different transformations I'm in. I mean, this was perfectly hitting all my buttons. It's wonderful.
This is when my interest in this game doubled. Yeah, I didn't know there were going to be different forms. You turned into the dragon. For all I knew, you were going to remain, or the lizard man or whatnot. And for all I knew, that's what you're going to stay as for the entirety of it. So as soon as you change forms and I learned, you know, there's a different mechanic with this character, I was intrigued. I couldn't wait to see what else might pop up. And we had talked about in the Vector Man episode, one of the best things about that was, you know, you could briefly change forms, but that was something they didn't really quite explore enough. But this game, it gives you plenty of time with each form. You have to play as them for a while, but then you're able to switch at will, which I was very thankful for. But yeah, this is what turned this game from something that I thought was decent into something I was then very excited to play.
And I'm totally with Billy. Once you start seeing these little things as you're going along the game, you're just like, well, this is obviously something I can't get to right now. And the game does a very good job of being like, okay, this is what you need to get through with this power. You know, with the checkerboard, you can obviously run on the sides or up and upside down or whatever. And going along the game, the further things that you can change into, you're just like, okay, well, I obviously see that these are the things that I can now access these new areas of the game. But I will say, I think the Mouse Man, as far as like actually playing him, is my least favorite, even more so than the Lizard Man, because the Mouse Man is so tiny. He is just a little guy. And that also goes for his reach as far as how far he can poke his sword out. It just inches out in front of him. And this was a common complaint I had with the rest of the game. It seemed like there were a lot of times where I would run into the enemy more so than I would having the enemy hit me. And I don't know if this was just something of how the game, the controls were or what, but it seemed to happen almost constantly when I was the mouse, because he just had such a short range of attack. But still, you know, there's not too many times in the game where you're forced to play as the mouse. He does seem to have a lot of exploration areas where you really need to kind of use him to access new areas of the game, more so than I think the rest of the characters in the game. But he was probably my least favorite as far as just controlling him and getting around stages.
Well, yes, his ability to cling onto walls is very. At first, it seems super cool, but it's a pretty narrow use, because there's most of the litterers don't use those special walls at all. So it's not like you'd even want to change back into the mouse to do something in those other areas. But the areas that are designed for the mouse, and there are some. There's a special sword you need that will create blocks. The only way to find that is as the Mouse Man. There's like a little tunnel you find in an area. But there's so the other transformations, instead of going through each area, because they're all basically the same style of area. I mean, they have a different graphical feel to each one, but they're all, you know, side-scrolling Metroidvania 2D games to some extent with some backtracking. So the forms you get are Mouse Man that we talked about, Piranha Man, whose special ability is he can swim in the underwater sections, which you have to actually go back to that beach you went to at the very beginning and then wander around that underwater section to find his the ghost ship to fight the dragon down there, which I thought was pretty cool. After Piranha Man, you're Lion Man. His special ability is that he will swing his sword in such an arc that it can break blocks above and below him, which is how you get to find his area is kind of underneath the city you start in. That you'd never be able to hit that with any other sword. And then you get Hawkman, who can fly, which, as always in every game, is the best possible option to be a character that can fly anywhere you want to go. The downside to Hawkman is that water hurts him, unlike everybody else. So if you're Hawkman, you can't go to the water section without dying pretty quickly. But otherwise, Hawkman rules and unlocks the rest of the game for you, including finding a whole bunch of other areas that you would never have found if you couldn't fly there. You can go back to the original castle that you fought at the very beginning to find some legendary weapons. You can go and find... Now, again, this is something that's only in the remaster, but there's a series of kind of challenge rooms, one for each form, and the Hawkman's needed to find about half of them. For example, in the volcano area, if you go all the way to the end of the volcano area, there's a little wall you can fly over that otherwise you'd never be able to get over. And that's got this challenge room for the Lizard Man. So you just have to get from the start of the lizard, the challenge to the end. Sometimes you need a key, sometimes you don't. But it's more of a gauntlet style, like just a series of challenging jumps or a series of an endless supply of really tough enemies. You get to the door at the end, you'll get I think they call them the Dragon Stones, or if not, it's the Something Stones. In any case, there's six of them in the remaster. In the original game, those stones are all over the place. They're not just six of them. There's a lot of them, and you need to have so many of them to buy different things at different shops along with money. So they took that out of the remaster. It really doesn't hurt the pace of the game by any means, because the stuff that you could buy before with the exception of one sword that you can buy in the remaster with those gems. The rest of them, they just made things cost a little more money. And money is pretty easy to come by. There's a lot of chests you can find in these areas. Some of them will respawn every time you die with new values of money in them. So if you find one of those and you go back to it every time you die, especially because you get to keep your money, you could effectively farm all the money you need to if you're patient enough without having to kill things over and over again. So I don't think it, removing those stones hurt the pace of the game at all. So anyway, eventually you get to be Hawkman. You find the best swords that you can get, and you go to the last area, which is, in my opinion, one of the best final area dungeons of these kind of games, because it makes you be everybody that you've already been. You don't have to be Lizard Man. You can start with Lizard Man if you want to, but you don't need to. But after that, there's a section you have to be the Mouse Man for, and then there's an underwater section, and then there's a section you need to be the Lion Man for, and then there's a section you need to be Hawkman for. And I like that. I like that a lot. I mean, you kind of had to master everything in this long gauntlet style dungeon at the very end of the game.
Yeah, that was really nice. I don't think we've mentioned it, but the difficulty in this game is it stays fairly easy for the most part, but then once you start to get like towards the end, especially with Lion Man, the difficulty in this game ramps up, and in that last dungeon it is kind of over the top. It really requires you to use each one of those characters the best that you can use them, because every single area for those characters are very difficult, especially once you get to the Lion Man and getting through those screens. It's really something. But yeah, it really makes you use each one of those characters as best as you can. And that's one of the best things you can do in a Metroidvania style game that I don't think games that do that these days do well. It's more about just getting the most the powerful things to get past areas and then forgetting the things that you had earlier in the game. But this one actually made you utilize everything that you had from the very beginning of the game and all the way up to what you had just got. So I thought that was pretty awesome.
And yeah, there's a big spike in difficulty, but it's earned. I think it's earned, and it's not like some games where it's just easy throughout the whole thing and then you are ill-equipped because you didn't see this coming. I think it gives you plenty of time to kind of get every character down, the nuances of them, the strengths, weaknesses, how to play as them, and then it ramps it up on you and allows you to apply what you have hopefully learned throughout the game. So yeah, it's a big difficulty spike, and we've had games where we've complained about that before, but I think this is just the best possible way of doing it.
Well, it's definitely that part's where I realized, and it wasn't this time I learned it as much, but I had to remember it. But if you don't change your items every time you change forms, you're going to be underpowered somehow. Either your sword's too weak, or you have a shield that doesn't work in that form, or your armor is only really good in this one form with this one shield. Like, there's some actual pretty specific gear breakdowns you have to get through that last dungeon pretty effectively, or else it is extremely difficult. If you get hit, it'll do a lot more damage. And then the Piranha Man's the one I always forget about. If you don't change to the right shield, almost all the shields for Piranha Man are useless, except for the Legendary Shield and the Aqua Shield. So if you have anything else, you could have the shield that gives the lion like the best defense, but as soon as you switch to Piranha Man, it's basically a piece of paper he holds in front of him, and all those projectiles in the end will just destroy you. So it's worth it definitely makes it hard, but it's not totally unbeatable. Along with all the power-ups you get to your character, you do get the extra hearts. There's you can get a total of 8 hearts by the end of the game, which is a good supply. There are potions that you can find. You can keep a max of 3 at a time that will give you back a random amount of life. It's not completely random, but it's between like 4 and 8 hearts. Sometimes it fully refills your bar. Sometimes it only gives you 4. But it's still nice to have those. They're kind of hard to find. You can buy them in some shops, but they're very expensive. But basically, if you've been paying attention while you're playing this game, you can make sure every time you go to that last dungeon to run it, you've got those extra potions, you've got everything you need, and you should make a good run at it. And it still felt challenging. I mean, I've beaten this game many, many times. That getting to that last dungeon was still kind of difficult. And then that's the only boss that had any mechanic that was really difficult, and that's because he flies around and shoots fireballs enough that we didn't mention this, and I'm surprised, because it's my biggest complaint with this game is the knockback. The knockback, when you get hit with an item, when you get hit by a monster or especially a projectile, it makes your character bounce around back and forth, especially if there's like three things around him getting hit. Now, it doesn't do damage to you over and over again, but you're literally just locked out of doing anything until the game decides your animation of being knocked around is finished. That's the only complaint I have about this game. And it was a one I can deal with, but that is... I almost when I first got hit with that a couple times, I was like, I wonder if Jeremy and Billy are going to get mad about this, because it's pretty irritating.
It's irritating. Yeah, anytime there's knockback involved, but it's just one thing with these older games. I mean, you just have to fucking expect that. I mean, it's bullshit of the highest order, but you just come to expect it, and you try to work around it the best you can.
Yeah, I mean, yes, definitely. The knockback is really weird. It's one of the stranger knockbacks in gaming. You know, if you ever think about knockbacks from the 8-bit era, you probably think of Castlevania. You know, you get hit, you basically jump backwards. And for the most part, you're jumping backwards into a pit where you fall down. The knockback in this game is really strange. You do kind of knock back, you know, into a jump. But like Jeremy said, if you continue to get hit... you continue to just get knocked back continually until you, like you said, it finds a spot where you're not taking a hit anymore, and then suddenly you're good to go. There are definitely parts in this game where I was getting hit and I had zero control over anything. I was just continually getting knocked back until the game decided I was in a spot where I was not going to get knocked back anymore, and that was really frustrating. That really wasn't the biggest control issue for me. My biggest control issue for this game was when, as you're moving forward in a full forward sprint, just holding the button down. Once you let off the forward button, your character kind of has a slide forward that just kind of you don't stop immediately, but you kind of just move forward a few feet. And I think I probably took more hits in this game from enemies that I slid into where they would hit me or something like that when I just kind of stopped moving and slid into them than I did when they were actually trying to hit me. I don't know if that was just me or what, but I did figure out what the issue was. It was because I was playing in the remaster mode, because the way they've redrawn these characters, They're kind of a little bit fatter and bigger than what they are in the original mode. Their hitboxes are still basically the same, but if you play in the remaster mode, the actual drawing of the characters kind of go a bit over what they are in the original game. They're kind of skinny in the original game. So when you're actually playing the original game and you do that slide, You really kind of see you've got enough room to still hit this guy. But when you're playing in the remaster mode, I found myself sliding into the enemies far more than I did when I was actually playing the original game. So I don't know if anybody else had any problem like that, but that was definitely something that I found that when I played the original graphics, that wasn't a problem for me.
So like we said, we've been basically playing this on the remaster that came out, which is just called Wonder Boy: The Dragon's Trap. It's on. I'm playing it on PS4. I think you guys are both playing it on the Switch.
I did, yes.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so I'm assuming that the emulation, or you know, the actual way it runs on both, is fine. I think the PS4. I didn't run into that problem that you just mentioned, Jeremy, about the, you know, how you were having that slide affecting you. But I honestly played this game mostly in classic graphics mode. Because that's what I remembered, and that's what I liked. I did look at the new graphics. What I really liked is that there's a button that switches between both graphic styles and both music styles that literally just like wipes across the screen and turns you from the old 8-bit graphics to the new graphics. So you can see that the game is literally laid on top of the old game. Like, it's not like it's, oh, you know, I know how this dungeon looked earlier and we changed where these platforms are. Nope, everything's exactly in the same spot. Sometimes the graphics, sometimes the backgrounds are way better on the remaster, where on the original game it's just a black wall, but it's still the exact same useful parts of the game. I thought that was really, really cool. And the best possible way to do a remaster, I mean, I guess I was surprised there weren't more things changed. Like I said, they changed where those those stones are, making them the bonus areas, and that's pretty much the only change I noticed from the get-go outside of, you know, new music and stuff, but it's a pretty accurate remake, but I can see why maybe if you hadn't played this before, there could be some frustration in how it's laid out.
Yeah, and that's, you know, when you play this new modern take on it, it's absolutely gorgeous. It just this amazing hand-drawn art and animation. It literally looks like it is a modern game, and that's what makes it so it's kind of crazy when you start playing this kind of game, you know, that looks like just this amazing modern 2D game. And there's these things that just that should be in a modern game that isn't in a modern game. So if you don't know that this is a remaster, what would this be, a remaster or a remake? What do we actually call this?
I'm not even sure, because I always forget what I would consider, you know, when you fully change a game or if you just kind of put out a new version of the same game. I mean, this is almost an exact remake. I mean, yeah. A remake has to be it. It's a full remake, new graphics, new sound, but it's the same game. It's not the same kind of game. It's not a game based on how they remember this game being. It's the exact same game with new graphics, new sound overlaying the old gameplay.
Yeah, and whatever it is, if you're playing it for the first time and you've got that the new graphics and everything like that, it looks like a modern game. Yeah. So it makes it that much more shocking when it doesn't have those things that a modern game would have, and just how obtuse some of this game actually is. And I think that's probably my biggest, criticism with this game is that maybe the remake or the remaster doesn't quite go as far enough to make this into the modern game that I want it to be. Eventually, I just kind of got over it not being that, because, you know, it's obviously just a strict just graphic overlay of what the Sega Master System game originally was. It's not trying to be much more than that. You know, if it had like a map system or just a map in the game to kind of show you different places where you haven't been, or the different heroes or something like Metroid even, but it doesn't even have that. You know, there are definitely things in this game that's just like, it's a holdover from that era. There are totally things that are just hidden, completely hidden in this game that you would never know that was even there if you didn't just randomly hit up on the D-pad to open a door that was totally hidden from view. In the later part of the game, you know, we were talking about the legendary items. The shield, you know, I went over there and I got the sword, the legendary sword and the legendary armor. And I was like, well, I must be missing a path in this castle to where this legendary shield is, because both of those, the other ones, were very easy to figure out. No, if you want to get the legendary shield, it's literally just a door that's hidden behind a graphic of the well that you jump out of. And if you didn't know that was there, you would literally have no idea that you were supposed to press up on the D-pad and there was a door there. There's just a lot of things here from 1989 that don't exist anymore in 2016. So I think that was, you know, it's not a critique against the game, really. It's just that this game is so good. It's so ahead of its time that if they would have really kind of put just a bit more into making this more of a new game, more so than just remaking the original, which I totally appreciate that's what they did. But man, if they would have just kind of modernized this up a little bit, this would have been probably one of the best Metroidvania games I've ever played, ever. I mean, as it is, I love it, but there's just a few things here and there as far as like getting around, not having a map system, and then just the random things that you can find. It kind of bums me out.
Yeah, and I'm right there. Throw a map on this. Keep it obtuse if you want to, if you must. Throw a map in it, and you have pretty much a perfect game of this type. And yeah, it's got a lot of that, a lot of just confusing, the stuff that you wouldn't know unless you read, and you know, back then, good fucking luck. But I mean, stuff I was having to look up a thing or two online as I played it this time. And it's just something that's kind of died down, and thankfully so over the years, that kind of obtuse, just throw all the shit against the wall, see what sticks. But yeah, I think that's one of the shortcomings, the boss lack of difficulty, but still, this is just it's a tremendous game. It's a great game. And just a few tweaks here and there would have just made it just the perfect Metroidvania game.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't make any major changes. Like I said, I can see where you guys are coming from. I mean, and not having a map was, even though I knew this didn't have one, for some reason I expected one on the remaster and remake, and it wasn't there. And I was kind of pleased, but I was also kind of surprised it wasn't there. But, you know, I still think it's still one of my favorite games on my PS4 now. So now I've bought this game in a third format, and it's excellent. Highly recommend it. If you haven't played it at all, I think, you know, both Billy and Jeremy hadn't played it before, and I think it's a well worth playing. So definitely check it out. And I think it's .emu put out the remaster. Amazing job. Just great.
As far as like the games that Jeremy P has recommended on this podcast, the games that we have had recommended on this podcast from all of us, I think this is actually my favorite game that I've never actually played. This was a complete surprise. You know, if you tell me that there's a classic Sega Master System game that I need to play, I will probably raise my eyebrow a good mile off of my head. But this is a legitimately good game. It is so ahead of its time. And, you know, there's some stuff that doesn't quite hold up well to this day, but I still just loved playing through it. It's just a really, really great game.
So there you have it. Everybody recommends Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap. If you can't find a Sega Master System and want to drop the money for the game, thankfully there's like we said, the remake is excellent. It's basically the exact same game with minimal changes, nothing that's going to make the game significantly easier or harder. So, again, we definitely recommend it. But next time, we're going to go to, and this is probably my fault for playing all those Infocom games. I wanted to take on another adventure game of that style, those graphic adventures. There aren't too many of those on consoles that we're looking at least. But one of the ones that I do remember never playing and wanting to was Uninvited for the Nintendo. I know it's a port of a Macintosh game, but I don't care about that. It's going to be the Nintendo version of the Uninvited. That we'll try for next episode. But Jeremy, I believe we have a listener question.
We do actually. This was posted on our YouTube page, and this is from Jake Barunda. He writes in saying, "Great channel, very entertaining. I was wondering if you have ever considered doing an episode on Neo Geo ports and all the various iterations on all of the different consoles, as well as comparing and contrasting." Them against one another.
That's a big order. That's a big order. I think if we had one game, like if we were going to talk about, you know, we talked about Metal Slug the Collection. You know, we talked about it before. If there was, you know, like Metal Slug 3, I know has been on several different versions of the console. I would definitely like to compare those on a game by game basis. I'm okay with that. The difficulty for me here is I don't have a Neo Geo, and I don't think I'll ever have a Neo Geo. I would love to have one. But the chances of me actually getting a Neo Geo fairly slim and continuing to be married. So there's no chance that that's happening.
I highly enjoy doing the Metal Slug anthology. I mean, they made that simple, you know, to get hold of. But, you know, I mean, if we had ever had the means to do so on that kind of scale, sure. I mean, that'd be fine. And as it stands now, the Switch seems to be dead set on picking up every Neo Geo game ever. So we will see. In the future, once the entire library is released.
That was something that I was fascinated. I'm still fascinated in. But back in the day, especially like 2D games, it was fascinating to see the difference between different consoles and how they ported those, to see, you know, which animation frames didn't make it over from the arcade to the PlayStation or something like that. There were just so many different things that you could compare and contrast, but I think the biggest problem these days is just getting a hold of those different versions. I mean, the Neo Geo is still the home console is still incredibly expensive, along with the games, and not even to mention the Neo Geo CD and The different versions. So that is a, it takes a good deal of money to maybe get a hold of those. And, you know, if you want to point to emulation, sometimes emulation isn't the best way to go about comparing those games, because a lot of emulators don't emulate them quite as in the way that the original console did. So, you know, I don't want to really hang my hat on something that was that I'm seeing on an emulator, because you just don't know. You don't. And YouTube is very quick to point out every fucking little thing that you might have missed or you were wrong about. So it's definitely one of those things I would like to be sure about. But at the same time, it's very hard to get a hold of all of those different versions of a game.
Well, it's the same reason that I, you know, while I'd love to have an episode where we talk about the Virtual Boy, if we don't all have Virtual Boys, that's not something you can talk about. You can't. Well, and you know, I've been pushing the those Intellivision Dungeons and Dragons games. But again, unless you guys have the systems and the actual original controllers, that's a big part of that game. So if you don't have the actual hardware for some of these things, emulation's nice. It's good to see what games are like and you know what things were you've missed out on possibly, but it's still not going to be the exact same experience as having the original controller and original console in front of you.
And you know, and that's why I can't get this Tiger retrospective underway yet.
We just can't do an episode based off the emulated Tiger handheld games. It's just
I can't find three copies of the MC Hammer Tiger game.
I've got to have the Tiger handheld that's shaped like MC Hammer's head to do an accurate of what that game was.
I'm going to be honest, Billy. I've actually looked for that game on eBay, and I cannot find it. So you may have found the only game I can't
find
a copy of.
It was like the only one that ever owned it, apparently.
once you have, you don't sell that. Once you have that, you enter into a lifelong bond with that game.
You pass it down to your grandchildren.
You take it upon yourself to mail it to each one of us so that we can play through it. And we will have an episode based on MC Hammer for Tiger handhelds.
Well, I would love to do more Neo Geo, but we definitely have to have it more focused on a game. I don't know if I could do a bunch of games at once very effectively, unless they're all a series. Having the same episode where we talk about, you know, King of Monsters and Baseball Stars or whatever the baseball game was on that, I think that would be difficult to handle. I'd rather just do these a game at a time. And then if we can compare them at that point, great. I'm all down for that.
I mean, yeah, there's a ton of Neo Geo games that I would, you know, love to do, but I think the biggest problem with a lot of Neo Geo games is like they were made to be arcade games. You know, these were made to be very, very short, 2-3 minute long games, and it can kind of be hard to discuss those for an hour, especially some of those earlier Neo Geo games. But I definitely do want to do more Neo Geo games because I love that console.
Well, it's going to have to wait at least one more episode, because as I said before, next episode will be on Uninvited for the NES. Clearly not a Neo Geo classic, but one I'm looking forward to trying. And I would like to say, if we can make the request to each other to keep track of how far we get before we give in and look up hints online, I think that we at least owe ourselves that to make the conversation an even playing field. But until then, please check us out on Retrovania.net, again on Facebook at Retrovania.net, on Twitter at Retrovania.net, on Instagram. Are we on Instagram? I don't even know. Probably not.
Did you ever make it on Instagram? I don't know.
I think I was supposed to. So let's take that back. If you find it at Retrovania on Instagram, chances are it's not us. So let them know about how great Retrovania.net is. And we will see you next time. For the outro this week, here is the town theme in both classic version and the remastered version. Switch back and forth a couple times. Enjoy.